Welcome to Vineyard 61's weekly podcast. We hope you'll be inspired, challenged, and encouraged by this week's speaker. For previous messages, go to our website, vineyard61.org, or subscribe via iTunes or SoundCloud.
We've been reading through Ruth the last month, except for last Sunday. And so today we are going to conclude in our series on Ruth, in the book of Ruth. And there's a lot to say, so let's get going. I'm just going to set my watch, otherwise we'll be here all day. And okay, there we go. Okay, so since we took a week off last week, I just want to catch us up because, you know, a lot happens in 1 week and then a lot happens in 2 weeks. So you're probably like, who even is Ruth and who's Naomi and what have we even been talking about? Maybe that's just me, but in prepping, I was like, what have we said over the last month? So just to give you a little bit of a brief recap, Ruth is set in the time of Judges. And in those days, this is how the book, right before the book of Ruth starts, this is how the book of Judges ends, okay? So this is kind of the context that we're entering with the book of Ruth, the story of Ruth and Naomi. In those days, Israel had no king and everyone did as they saw fit. And so it's really important that we keep that in mind as we're talking this morning. So just hold that. I'm going to ask you to hold quite a few things. And then what ends up happening is in Act 1, Ruth and Naomi, it's Naomi and Elimelech. They go to a different land, Moab. They're Israelites. They're living in Bethlehem. Bethlehem experiences a famine. And so they decide to go to a different land, a different people, which also means different gods. And they go somewhere else and their sons end up marrying two Moabite women, one of those women being Ruth, okay? So a foreigner, an outsider. And in that time, when they're living in Moab, they live there for about 10 years. And in that time, Naomi loses her husband, and then she loses her two sons, which is the husband of Ruth. And essentially, Naomi says, look, there's nothing for me here. So I'm going to go back to my people. I'm going to go back to my land. There is nothing to essentially sustain my life here. And she tells Ruth and Orpah, her two daughter-in-laws, to stay with their people. They'll take care of you. Go back to your families, go back to your dads, because, right, patriarchal society, they'll take care of you. Don't come with me. But Ruth pledges herself to stay faithful to Yahweh and faithful to Naomi. And so Ruth and Naomi make the journey back to Bethlehem, back to Israel, where Naomi is from. And Ruth meets a man named Boaz in a field as she is picking up wheat so that they can survive. And Boaz shows himself to be a man of character, and he's generous, and he offers her not just food, but also safety. He says, stay in my field, glean from this field. My men will look after you. They will not hurt you, right? And so he is really kind to her in her time of need. And then she comes back, she tells Naomi this, and Naomi has this sort of like gush of hope, like, well, maybe our lives are not ruined, essentially. Maybe there is some hope for us. And so then we enter chapter 3, and where Naomi encourages Ruth to go back to Boaz and essentially says, would you marry me? Would you redeem my family? Would you help us in our circumstance? And Boaz, being the man of character that he is, says, I will, because I am the kinsman redeemer, which if you kind of remember 2 weeks ago, Viv talked about what is a kinsman redeemer? What does he have to have? A kinsman redeemer was a person within a family that had three things, that needed to have three things in order to redeem someone when they were in a state like this, when there wasn't a father or a male figure to essentially sustain their family line. And they needed three things, which was they needed the right, so the legal ability to do this. So this means if someone was a kinsman redeemer, they had the legal ability to claim their property, but also that means their debts, right? So when the kinsman redeemer comes in and redeems a family, they don't just get land and inheritance, they also actually accumulate that family's debts. If they owe anything or if they have anything, any other responsibilities, they take claim of that. So that also means the Redeemer has to have the resources, the ability to take on those debts. And then the third thing is they need to have the resolve. The kinsman redeemer needs to have the resolve, the perseverance. They need to want to redeem this person, this family. And what we're going to see in chapter 4 is this resolve becomes the deciding factor as to who is the redeemer in this story. So I've just summed up 3 chapters in 3 minutes. And where we're going to step in, we're going to read the whole chapter, chapter 4. And where we're going to step in is, this is what has just happened. Boaz has told Ruth, I will redeem you. I will take care of you. I will make sure that you and Naomi live, is what he's saying. If it's not me, it will be somebody else who is a closer relative, meaning he has a greater right, okay? A greater right to redeem you and Naomi. And so I will make sure either me or this other kinsman redeemer will redeem you. And so this is where we enter. He has said this to Ruth. Ruth goes back to Naomi and they're waiting. And as they wait, we pick up with what does Boaz go on to do? And so we are going to read chapter 4. And you can follow along, I think, on the slides. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to town. Oh, let me read from the slides, actually. Went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer, kinsman redeemer, had mentioned came along. Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. And Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here. And they did so. And then he said to the guardian redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know, for no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. I will redeem it, he said. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the guardian redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are my witness. You are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth, the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife. In order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today, you are my witnesses. Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, we are witnesses. We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in a path, however you say that, and be famous in Bethlehem through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman. May your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. And the women said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. for your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. And he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. Which, if you remember how this starts, how the book of Judges ends, there was no king, and Israel longed for a king. And so here, as the writer of Ruth ends, we're pointing forward, immediately reminding us that there's a bigger story happening than just a marriage and a baby. Why don't I pray before we jump in? God, I thank you that you are at work in each of our individual stories. And I pray, God, this morning as we look at the final chapter of Ruth, we would be re-envisioned as to what redemption looks like in our lives and through our lives. And so, God, I pray now that you would speak through me. You would draw our attention to what we need to learn and see and realize this morning. Stir up our thoughts, our imaginations, our hearts, our lives, Lord. We want to know you even greater, and we want the city of London to know you and how good you are. Amen. Okay. So there's quite a bit happening here. But in this, in the whole book of Ruth, here's my question to you. Who is the Redeemer? Just think on that. How would you answer that question? If someone says, "Who is the Redeemer of this story?" Who would you say? I'm proposing there are multiple Redeemers this morning. I think there are three. You have Boaz, the formal Redeemer, Ruth, the hidden Redeemer, and God, the ultimate Redeemer. And so that's where we're going to go this morning. We're going to look at these three that play a role in the entire work of redemption in this story. Where we pick up in chapter 4, as Boaz goes into the city, you know, what we know of Boaz before chapter 4 is he is this open-hearted, kind, considerate, generous man to Ruth. And then we turn the page and we read chapter 4, and Boaz, we see a different side of him. He's clever. He's strategic. He's playing the long game with this unnamed guardian kinsman, another word for kinsman redeemer, for the sake of Ruth and Naomi's well-being. And so there's just a few things to kind of help paint the picture here, because we are not ancient Israelites. We are modern people living in 2024 in London. And so here are some things that just, you know, to help paint the picture of like what's happening. This is a very formal legal proceeding happening. So Boaz is gathering at the town gate, and the town gate, that's okay. Let them just come through. Hi guys. Hello. We're best friends this morning, running around. So they're at the town gate, and the town gate isn't just where people enter and exit the city. The town gate is where legal proceedings happen. And so he is essentially in an ancient courtroom as he is waiting for this other kinsman redeemer to come around. So he is laying the land, like setting the scene for something formalized to happen. And then not only that, but this idea of the 10 elders, that's the exact number of people you need elders to formalize and ratify a decision. So he's in the right place and he's with the right people and he's waiting. He's waiting for this kinsman redeemer to come by. And what you see here is this other kinsman redeemer, he's just called my friend, or in other translations, so-and-so. I thought my friend was a little nicer, so I went with that translation. But essentially, he goes unnamed because this man actually ends up not being important. is what's happening. It's kind of like when you're talking to somebody and you're like, it doesn't matter who I was talking to, but you know, so-and-so, we did this and we went there. It doesn't matter who that other person is. And just again, hold that as I'm asking you to hold some things because they're all coming together in chapter four. So-and-so, we don't get to know his name, but we get to realize that that's important, okay? The writer subtly is writing in clues for us to understand what's happening. So Boaz greets him. He's friendly. He says, come sit down with me at this in this ancient courtroom with 10 elders, all these people watching, men of authority and power. And he presents Naomi's story, right? So she's returned from Moab. She's selling her land. You're entitled to it first. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to help out or not? And he replies, of course, I'll redeem it. Who doesn't want more property, right? Property is wealth at that time. That's a good thing. But also keep in mind, he is also acquiring any debts they would have had. And so he says, I'll redeem it. And then this is where Boaz, I think he's playing the long game here. He is strategic and he refers to Ruth the Moabite, which he, in previous chapters, the writer and everybody else in the story refers to Ruth as Ruth the Moabite, but Boaz doesn't. This is the first time Boaz refers to Ruth as her nationality. And in referring to her nationality, what he's saying is she's a foreigner. She doesn't belong. And even Israel and Moab, they have a checkered past, to say the least. There's lots of things that have gone on between these two people that has not been good. And Israel, they're not a big fan of Moabites. And so this little detail causes this man, this unnamed so-and-so, to backtrack and says, actually, never mind. Never mind. I don't want to acquire the land or any of the inheritance that could come through Naomi and Elimelech's line. And in this moment, what we see is this man's lack of kindness. In the opening talk, Holly, in Ruth 1, she had this one brilliant line, crisis reveals character. And I wouldn't say that this moment for so-and-so, this kinsman redeemer, is a crisis moment, but I would say he's squeezed, right? Can you imagine the pressure he's feeling? He's in an ancient courtroom. He's with people of power, and he's being pressed to, you need to make a decision now. What are you going to do about Naomi and Ruth? Are you going to redeem them? Are you going to take care of them? And so in this moment, while maybe not a crisis, there is pressure applied, and something is coming out of him. Crisis reveals character. And what he chooses is he chooses to protect himself and his property, this unnamed kinsman redeemer. And while it might look manipulative of Boaz to spring to this decision to reveal this man's heart, just to just apply enough pressure to say, like, will you do what is right? What he's doing is he is protecting Naomi and Ruth. Because we have to remember, this man is only entitled to Naomi's land because of blood, not because he's proven himself to truly care for either woman. Boaz is protecting Naomi, and he's protecting Ruth by asking this question, by pointing out this detail. And what comes out of this unnamed redeemer is that he is first and foremost worried about himself. He's worried about his estate. He's worried about his legacy. He's worried about his reputation, and he doesn't want to risk what he has. And what's important here, what the writer is doing, is not necessarily saying how bad this unnamed redeemer is. He's saying, look at how wonderful Boaz is. They're both kinsmen redeemers, but Boaz has the resolve to provide and protect Ruth and Naomi. Right? He shared his field. He told his men, look after Ruth as she gleans. Throw some extra so it's easy for her. Make sure they have enough. He provides. He truly has proven himself to care for these women. And what he's wanting to do in this moment in pinpointing, cornering this other kinsman redeemer is he wants to say, look, if things get hard again, if Israel has another famine, are you going to look out for these women? when it would be really tempting and easy to say, actually, Ruth, you're a Moabite and I'm not going to care for you. And then she would be left once again. He is looking out for her to provide and protect her in the long run. And he doesn't know what this kinsman redeemer is going to say, but potentially he's playing to the potential prejudice. And that's what comes out, is that this other kinsman redeemer doesn't look at the heart like Boaz has. He's looking at the nationality and the background of a woman who is just named Ruth the Moabite. And what we see is, I mean, how many thousands of years later are we talking about Ruth and we're talking about Boaz? Their sacrifices and love become a part of a cosmic legacy, right? This other man, he's forever going to be known as the other man, so-and-so. Who was that? We'll never know. But Boaz, as he does the right thing and he sacrificially loves Ruth in this moment and looks out for Ruth and Naomi, he becomes a part of this cosmic story of redemption, right? Because from the line of David, even though in the text we only go to David, what we know is from the line of David comes Jesus, the ultimate redeemer. And so forever, Boaz becomes a part of this cosmic story, this beautiful redemptive story of God that is unfolding for all the generations. And this is why the women who surround Naomi at the end of this book say, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel." He has become famous. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. And then they go on, right? They go on to say, "For your daughter who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth. You know, we have to ask, this book isn't called Boaz, this book is called Ruth. Ruth, again and again in this book, is the hidden redeemer. If you're familiar with ancient Jewish symbolism, seven is a number of perfection. And so what these women are saying is, your daughter-in-law, who is better to you than seven sons, there's nothing more perfect than seven sons. Seven sons is the most perfect of perfect, except now for Ruth. Ruth is more perfect than seven sons. See, Ruth has brought redemption to Naomi. She has been faithful and she has loved her. And Naomi herself, if we just backtrack a little bit to chapter one, Naomi has nothing to offer when her husband dies, when her sons die, but Ruth still does. In a time period where childbearing was really important to carrying on a family and living and surviving, Ruth still had one thing to offer. She can remarry, she can have a life. And I think we can get caught up in that detail and say that's ancient. It's not about getting married again and having children. It's about who takes care of you in your old age. There wasn't 401ks or retirement plans. At that time, families provided for families. Redemption wasn't about marriage or children. It was about provision. In this moment, in the beginning of the story, when Ruth and Naomi lose just about everything, Naomi has lost everything, but Ruth still has one thing. And it's the potential for family. That means there is a potential for her life to be saved. But Naomi has lost hers. Naomi has absolutely nothing. And it would have been reasonable for Ruth to return home to her people, to her family, to her gods, and they would have taken care of her. I think anybody in their right mind would say that's the right thing to do. But that's not what Ruth does. When Naomi urges her to go back to her people, Ruth says, "No, I will stay with you. I will pledge myself to you." And while this doesn't make any sense, then the question is, why would Ruth do that? Right? Because she says, if anything but death parts me from you, anything, she anticipates anything to happen. It makes no sense. Why would she sign up for a worse life? If you think about people who immigrate to another country, another land, they're always looking for a better life, aren't they? But here, Ruth is signing up for a worse life. Why would she do that? Why would she say,
that?
Well, if you look at, she says, may the Lord do so. So she is referring, when it says in our text, in our Bibles today, when Lord is all caps, it means in the original language, Yahweh was used. So there are multiple names for God, and we probably know some of them. And one of them that is like a generic name is Elohim. And when somebody refers to God and says Elohim, that's a general name. But when somebody uses the word Yahweh, it's the personal name. Yahweh is the personal name that God reveals to Moses in the burning bush. It's the name that people who know God personally, deeply, in their raw moments, in their real moments, people who are friends of God, people of God, family of God, those are the people who use the word Yahweh. And so when we read the Bible and Lord is capitalized like that, it's the personal name of God, the close name of God. And what Ruth is saying is, I know this covenantal God, and I believe in him. And so she knows what she has to do. We have to remember, Ruth is not an Israelite. This would not be common for her. Yahweh would not have been the gods she grew up with. But she has seen, from living with Ruth, Naomi's family, she has seen and encountered the real Lord, Yahweh. And so she decides, I'll sacrifice my family and my name and potential suitors back in my homeland, because if I don't, I'll lose this God, the God of Israel, that I have come to know and believe in. And if Naomi is going to live and get her life back, then Ruth is going to have to give up everything. Her own name, her own wealth, her biological family. But she wouldn't lose the God that she's come to know and trust personally. If Naomi goes back to Israel, Naomi will become nothing. She has nothing to sustain her, to give her life back to her. But Ruth also knows that if she goes with Naomi, Naomi has a better chance to survive, because Ruth can marry and provide for Naomi, potentially. And so this is the question Ruth has at the beginning of this story that we see culminate in the end. Ruth, in the beginning of the story, in this moment that she pledges herself to Naomi, is, whose life to save? Mine or Naomi's? Whose life to save? If I go back to my land and my people, I will lose Yahweh, the God of Israel, the personal God, a God who loves me and knows me and is faithful to me, and Naomi will die. But if I go with Naomi, I will become a foreigner. I will have a lesser status. I will be looked down upon. I will have nothing materially to show for. But I will have Yahweh, and Naomi might have a chance to get her name back, her status back, her life back. If I give up my life, Naomi might gain hers. There's no guarantee when they turn around and go back to Israel. There's no guarantee, but Ruth takes that chance and says, may the Lord do so to me. And more also, if anything but death parts me from you, you can have my whole life for the hope that you gain yours back. And what we see in the very end of this is that Naomi gains everything back. She starts in a famine, and then when they go back to Israel and they meet Boaz, she's generously fed by these fields that Boaz owns. And when she's left on her own and doesn't have family that can provide for her and protect her, then Ruth stays with her and is faithful to her. And she then begins to have a new family, not by blood, but by loving faithfulness. And Naomi loses sons, but in the end gains a son. And what we can get lost in is the literal one for one. But the reality is this new life, this son is showing us what is redemption. Redemption is life. Redemption is about having new life. Nick Crawley from the Bible for Life organization says this: this is where the story speaks to all apprentices in the kingdom of heaven today. It is the strength of Ruth's loyal kindness and patient love for Naomi that both wins and inspires Boaz to reciprocate, and in doing so, drives the story's narrative and development to the point where piece by piece, Naomi's tragedy is redeemed until finally little Obed sits on her lap. Little Obed represents new life. And what we know is the ultimate redeemer, Jesus himself, offers new life. He says, I am the life. I have come to offer life, abundant life. I am the resurrection life. I am the way and the life, the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus is the ultimate redeemer, and he cuts through. You don't need a marriage, and you don't need a lineage, and you don't need someone to pass things on to, and you don't need inheritance. I, Jesus, the ultimate redeemer throughout this entire story, have come to offer new life again and again and again. And in every way that we think we have to provide for ourselves or make a way for ourselves, any way that we recognize what redemption looks like in our days today, Jesus says, it's me. You're looking for life and you have found it in a person. We no longer need marriage or children or a job, success, a house, name it. Name it just right now to yourself. What do you think brings you life? The good news is the ultimate redeemer isn't bound to those things. We can find full good life through the person of Jesus. Tim Keller says this: if we put our trust in God and give our lives to him, we'll find that he has plans for us that are bigger than anything we could ever imagine. We'll find that he has plans for us that are bigger than anything we could imagine. It's good news. It's really good news. So then the question, I'm inspired by Ruth and Boaz, right? This formal redeemer, this hidden redeemer, they ultimately reveal the ultimate redeemer, that God is present in the stories, in their lives. And so then our question as we end this series is this: what does it mean to be a part of God's redeeming story today? For each of us individually, but also us collectively as a church. And I'm just going to propose three things I think might be helpful to consider that we see in the story of Ruth. The only way that Ruth was able to go with Naomi was because she knew God personally. God is working a redemptive story for each of us. And we cannot offer redemption that isn't, we cannot offer the redemption we haven't received, if that makes sense. If we don't know the ways that God has redeemed us and is redeeming us, it becomes very hard and it can feel like empty promises to other people. But Ruth knew personally the redemptive power of God. And that's what motivated her to lay down her entire life and everything that gave her worldly security so that Naomi might gain her life back. And so maybe this morning, the invitation to you is just to consider, how has God been redeeming your life, redeeming you, bringing life to you, healing, freeing, changing, inspiring, redeeming your life? And then the second one is to trust God's way of life. Remember, this story starts in the time of Judges. And when Judges ends, it says everyone lived according to what they saw fit. But what we see through Boaz and what we see through Ruth is they do the opposite. They do what is right in the eyes of God. They take care of other people. They sacrifice themselves. They love the Lord, their God, first and foremost. They take care of the poor. They help the vulnerable. They're faithful to those around them. They look beyond man-made boundaries and stereotypes to love and care. And both of them, they just offer what they have. They don't go out and like try to do something new. Ruth just is aware that she is still able to care for Naomi. And so she, you know, binds her life to Naomi's and says, I will take care of you. And Boaz has a field and has wealth. And so he has the right to redeem them. So he just uses what he already has. I think sometimes when we read these stories, we can think of like these big dreams and what if, and well, I'm not that and I don't have this. But what do you have? Because everyone has something. I mean, it could be even as small as a smile and a hello to somebody who's looks like they're having a bad day. Could be a new friendship. Or maybe it's something more. But it's first and foremost, it is knowing God personally, and it is trusting in his way of life. And then this is just a little bit of a creative one, I think. Dream for redemption. As I've been kind of just stirred this year, personally, I'm walking around London and I'm just asking God, like literally as I walk down the streets, I'm just like, God, what does redemption look like here on this corner or at this school or with my neighbors or, you know, on Melody Road? What does redemption look like? And so maybe the practice you take away this morning is dreaming. What does redemption in our city look like? In your family, in Wandsworth, near Southside Mall, your neighbors, your workplace, for immigrants, for widows, for the lonely, for the poor. You fill in the blank. What does redemption look like? But we can't partner with God if we don't know what he's doing. And so this week, walk around and just ask, God, what are you doing? How are you redeeming? Because again, all throughout the story of Ruth, they go about their everyday lives as everyday normal people. And God seems to knit together a story of redemption. And then Ruth and Boaz, they become people that are a part of this redemptive story. And that, I think, is the invitation for us today. We can be modern day Ruths. We can be modern day Boazes. Ultimately like Jesus in our city. I'm going to invite Harriet back up as we go into a time of worship. Can I invite you to stand? And I'm just going to pray a simple prayer.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Tune in next week for another life-giving message from one of our Vineyard 61 speakers.